From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect, and I'm Bonnie North. It's an all-music show today, starting with composer, instrument builder, and sound designer Cheryl Leonard, who's been in residence at UWM this week. Later, Nora Collins tries to make a name for herself on the country music scene from Brookfield.
You know, I've been to Nashville a couple times, but I decided this on my own, and I've also been told this, that it's best to stay where you're at and try to build a following there first and grow from there.
And why it's worth playing in Nashville, even when you're not a country band.
Just everyone likes making really good music there, writing, working on your craft and learning from each other. And so no matter what genre you're in, you just take a lot from it and you grow a ton. And if you want to get better, it's the best place to be because you're inspired by so many legends that are just hanging out there.
And All Music Lake Effect comes your way next. First, the news. Welcome to an all-music show on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Music is all around us. All you have to do is listen. That's what happened one day when outdoor enthusiast and composer Cheryl Leonard was in the woods improvising with a friend. She took a rosin bow and bowed the bark of a tree and other nature objects to explore their sounds. Although she didn't hear much then, she explored the idea further by amplifying the micro-aural worlds around us. And that is the music to Leonard's ears. Leonard, who's visiting the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's film department this week, spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson about what she hears that the rest of us may be missing.
I think what I'm hearing is the detail of the sound. So what I do is I amplify these objects, and then I play them in different ways. And I try to find the voices that they contain. So, for example, you can bow a pine cone and actually get pitches so that you could play a melody on a pine cone. And it's quite a beautiful sound. And I like to work with those sounds and draw attention to them. And hopefully other people will enjoy them as well.
How did you become interested in composing for the raw materials as opposed to traditional Western musical instruments?
Yes, well, I do know how to compose for normal instruments as well. And that is how I started out. And I became more and more interested in extended techniques, so producing unusual sounds on normal instruments like a flute or a violin. At the same time, I was studying electronic music, so working with timbre and all the details of sound in that world. And I was also doing improvisation with people, and I would improvise with my friends, and they would show up with a piece of metal from the junkyard, and sometimes that would make really great sounds. So I just started playing with whatever materials I had around. I'm a person who likes to be outdoors a lot, so it kind of makes sense that I would evolve into a place where I am playing materials from outdoors. There was a specific incident where a friend and I were improvising outside. He was playing cello and I was playing viola, and we were just doing free improv, and suddenly we started just bowing things in the forest where we were hanging out. So we just tried bowing everything. We were trying to bow the lichen and the leaves and the bark. And, of course, a lot of those things did not sound good. If you bow lichen, it sounds kind of like styrofoam. Very screechy and awful.
So was this with or without rosin on the bow?
With rosin on the bow.
Ooh.
Yeah. But some of the sounds were interesting, and that just kind of gave me some ideas I thought I would pursue farther.
So then when you're composing with raw materials and you're performing, it says that you use microphones in order to bring out the micro-aural. So how did you go from playing in the natural environment to hooking up the microphones? Like, because if you were you probably weren't hearing those micro-aural sounds when you were experimenting at that one day.
True. Like out in the forest, just bowing some bark.
Yeah.
Well, if you stick your ear really close, you can hear it. Yeah, I've also have a background in some sound engineering, so I do know a lot about miking things. I would notice that I could produce an interesting sound, but it was way too quiet to be heard by an audience. Mm. I could hear it myself on stage, so it would need to be amplified. And then from there, I discovered there are lots of sounds that you can't hear hardly at all with the naked ear, but once you amplify them, they're quite interesting.
Do the microphones change the timbre or any of the sounds when you're miking the raw material at all?
Of course. So as anyone who's worked with microphones knows, which mic you choose has a big impact on the quality of the sound you're going to get. So I have a lot of different microphones I use. Some of them have more bass. Some of them are more trebly. And I'll experiment with that. So I might have a pine cone, and I'll try a regular contact mic on it. I'll try an underwater microphone. I'll try a condenser microphone and just see which sounds I like the best.
What do the raw materials offer that traditional instruments don't?
Some chaos. More chaos, I think, than a traditional instrument. And unique sounds. So if I bow a limpet shell, it doesn't sound like anything else that you've ever really heard. There's that. And because they're unrefined, right? If you think about how long it took to develop the violin into, you know, its pristine form that we have now, that's very different than just picking up a rock and right. playing with whatever sounds you get out of it. But I like that. Having a little chaos is good. It makes you think about things in new ways.
So when composing, are you creating a melody, a harmony, or what are you thinking about when you are composing for these raw materials?
A very good question. People are like, what does that sound like? I'm thinking about all of these things. For me, I usually start out with timbre, so the character of the sound, the flavor of the sound. I'm interested in subtleties, in complexity of sound. But it's not just that. Of course, as a trained composer, I am interested in having a melody so that at some point there's something an average listener could latch on to and find interesting. Sometimes there is harmony. There's definitely rhythm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all those musical elements are in there.
And now, do you also go for patterns, or is this more free-form composing, do you think?
Yeah, there's patterns, right? Mm-hmm. If music is organizing sound, we're going to have patterns. Yeah, and to make it feel like a cohesive piece, you need to have some repetition and shape and development.
So how do you go ahead and notate your music? Because you're probably not using regular quarter notes and half rests and so on. So how do you notate?
Yeah, so a lot of times the instruments don't have a clear, normal pitch. You can't say, oh, that's middle C. So I usually make up my own notation. I'm using largely graphic notation, which is drawing little pictures of the sounds. And placing those pictures in time. So I could look at 30 seconds, this little blob starts and it gets fatter and then it gets skinnier, and that means the sound gets louder and then gets softer. Depending on the instrument and the playing techniques, I have to have different notations. So if the way I'm producing a different sound is using more pressure on the bow, I need to indicate that somehow. So I'll draw a little squiggle or something that tells me to do that. And although it may sound improvised if you haven't heard the music before, it's very composed, and I rehearse it a lot, and it's very repeatable. Thank you.
So you're also an instrument builder and have created instruments like the pipe organ bubbler, which is nothing like the Wisconsin bubbler, and the teasel harp. Is that right? Teasel harp?
Or yeah. Teasel, yeah. It's a plant.
So when you're building your instruments, do you use traditional instruments as a starting point, or how do you start out creating an instrument?
Well, I actually don't start from a normal instrument. I am often asked, so do you build stringed instruments or percussion instruments? I usually start with the material. What is the material? If I'm working with teasels, it look like they're a plant like a thistle. So it's like the pokey part. What is that? What part of that makes sound? And then how can I mount a set of those so that they're easy to play? And that I can amplify them easily and that they sound good. Or, for example, I have an instrument I'll be playing here, which is made out of limpet shells. And I discovered I could bow the limpet shells with a violin bow, which is super cool. But in order to do that, I need to hold them at the very center of the shell. So I had to find a way to clamp them so I could play a set of them. So I designed the instrument as these clamps made out of wood to hold a set of 10 shells so I could play a scale or a melody.
So it sounds like you had to have some a little acoustic training or physics training when you're trying to create these instruments. I mean, did you go ahead and have that training, or are you self-taught?
In college, I studied a bunch of things that are somewhat relevant to what I'm doing now. I have studied acoustics a little. I've studied some sound engineering. I actually really haven't taken physics since high school. But yeah, so some of it's trial and error, mm-hmm. and some of it's research, right? If you decide what you want to do, then you can go out and learn about it.
So what is the process of creating the instruments? Do you create the instrument and then write the music, or do you write a piece of music and then create the instrument to fill the void, kind of like Wagner with the Wagner horn? Like, what is the process? It's kind of like a chicken and egg situation.
Actually, I usually have to build the instrument first. I might have an idea about what I'd like to do with the piece, but I don't totally know what it will sound like until I build the instrument, because the materials need to be mounted a certain way and that affects the sound. Like we were saying before, the choice of the microphone makes a big difference. So in order to compose, to know what I'm composing with, I have to make the instrument and choose the amplification first.
So then what happens to these instruments once you're done with them? Do you give them to the place that commissioned the piece? Do you have them all sitting at your house? Where are they?
They're slowly filling up my studio.
At 2 o'clock today, you're hosting an event called Tinker's Lab. What can we expect to tinker with there?
Well, I'm going to bring the instruments that I have with me here, which are a couple of things made with penguin bones from Antarctica, and then the limpet shell instrument I was describing. And you can come and try to play those. I'll show you what I do to play them. I have brought a bunch of different things like violin bows and different kinds of percussion mallets that you can try out and different microphones. So it's kind of a chance to just play around with sound. I welcome you to bring your own materials, too. So if you have something you'd like to see what kinds of sounds it makes, like your coffee mug or your actually, I discovered that my desk lamp made really great sounds. Bring it on over, and we'll see what we can make with it.
Well, Cheryl, that sounds like a fun time, and it's a good way to end the week. So, Cheryl Leonard, thank you so much for being on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
Composer, instrument builder, and sound designer Cheryl Leonard is visiting the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's film department. She's hosting an event at the Kenilworth Building this afternoon at 2 o'clock. It's called Tinkerer's Lab, and it's open to the public. Leonard spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson. Coming up next, we'll chat with and hear tunes by Brookfield's Nora Collins on our All Music Show. Collins has a gig tonight at the Pabst. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. The voice you're hearing now is as polished as some musicians twice her age. It belongs to Brookfield's Nora Collins, who's still in her teenage years. But she's already collected two Rising Star Awards by the Wisconsin area music industry, and she's open for some major names on the country music scene. Tonight, she'll share the Pabst stage with Ronnie Millsap. Collins dropped by the Lake Effect studio last fall to chat with Mitch Tyke and to play a few songs, including this original called Harley. Like a rocket on the road, baby, let's go. Take me down every back road. Till the stars fade away at dawn. Let's live like a country song. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh.
That's Harley, Nora Collins in the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Thank you so much, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Do you remember the first time you picked up a guitar?
I first picked up a guitar when I was in fourth grade. So I was 10 years old, and I took lessons for a summer, but then I set it down and it laid in my room for 4 years until I picked it back up when I was 14.
What made the difference? Why were you just not ready at 10?
Well, I think I just really didn't like practicing. You know, and I just wanted to play songs. I didn't want to, you know, learn the scales and everything. So when I picked it back up when I was 14, I remembered four chords that I learned, and I taught myself how to play again by writing a song.
What was that song? What do you write about when you're 14?
Boys. The first song I wrote, it was called Every Time, and it's the first track on my very first CD, Red Chuck Taylor's.
What do you think made the difference between the time you were 10 and 14? Were you listening to a lot of music in that time?
Well, I've always listened to a lot of music. I mean, I grew up with, you know, my dad always had the radio playing. I guess the real difference was I was playing because I wanted to when I was 14. You know, no one was forcing me to do it, to practice and learn the scales. So,
where does writing a song start for you? I mean, you talk about the first song you wrote when you were 14, but today, when you want to write a song, do you sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a song now and then try to channel something? Or does it just strike you when, you know, you're at the grocery store or you're playing or you know, where does it start?
Now it kind of comes when a thought comes to me, you know, or I see something that sparks an idea. And then I try to sit down and go through it, but I never try to force it.
How long does it usually take? I mean, how do you know when you have it right?
Every song is different. When I wrote my first song when I was 14, you know, that took 10 minutes. You know, it's a very simple song. And now, you know, it can take, you know, a couple hours or maybe even a couple days. You know, it depends on, I guess, that day and, you know, what's going through my mind and if I'm on a roll or if I'm not.
Do you throw out a lot before you get to the point where you've got something that you're happy with?
Well, I've learned a lot about songwriting in the past year, and so I do throw out a lot of stuff, and I go back and I make revisions because I want to make sure I'm writing the best song I possibly can.
Who has made the difference? How have you learned about songwriting, and especially in just the last year?
Well, I'm a member of NSAI, which is Nashville Songwriters Association International, and there's a Milwaukee chapter, and they meet once a month, and they talk about the different aspects of songwriting and how to craft a song. So I've learned a lot there, and also I had the awesome opportunity to write with Willie Porter, and the song we wrote together actually is the title track of my brand new CD, but he really helped me to understand different points of songwriting that I didn't know before.
Where did your voice come from? You talked about how you picked up the guitar and then picked it up again 4 years later. When did the singing become part of what you do?
I've sung my whole life. I've always loved to sing. And the first song I sang was when I was three. It was My Heart Will Go On, Celine Dion. And I was a member of our church junior choir, so I always sing in church. I was constantly singing. So that's always been something that I love to do. And
Well, we would love to hear you sing another song. What
sure.
do you have for us?
This next song is another song that I wrote by myself, and there's two versions of this song. There's a version that's on my brand new CD, Only the Beginning, and another version that's more of a poppy full band version. So here's I'll Pray for You. Your face, but a sense of sweetness in your eyes. If it wasn't for that lipstick stain, I would have believed your lies. Some about those baby blues, I always thought I'd have them to fall into. Turns out they were the key in your demise. I gave you my heart, you broke it in two. They'll be fine, I'm more worried about you. You're lying, cheating, some vegan. Lucky for you, broken hearts are mendable. Not even the Lord could save your sorry soul. You dug the grave in which you what you deserve. So for now, I'll walk away. And even though you've been quite the jerk, well, I'll let karma do my dirty work. I don't want your blood on my hands. Oh, no. I gave you my heart. You broke it in two. It'll be fine. I'm more worried about you. Cheating, some vegan. Lucky for you, broken hearts are mendable. Not even the Lord could save your sorry soul.
It's Nora Collins in the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Thank you so much. Excuse the awkward nature of this question, but
sure.
How old are you?
I'm 19.
What is the hardest part of this business for you at this point?
I guess trying to balance everything. I'm also going to school, and but I'm also, you know, I'm very serious about the music thing. I'd love to make music my career. And so trying to balance between school, doing, you know, the business end of the music, and also, you know, writing songs and learning new covers. And I have a very busy performance schedule, so it's a lot, but it's what I love to do.
Well, and you mentioned the business aspect of the equation, and it seems unlikely nobody becomes a musician so that they can be a small business person, but it's such a necessary part of the equation unless you have a big label behind you. How much work is the marketing yourself aspect of it?
It's a lot of work, but I'm very lucky. I have a lot of help from my family, and you know, it pays off for sure.
Who have been the people you mentioned, Willie Porter? Who have been the other kinds of musicians, either in the Milwaukee area or outside the Milwaukee area, that have played a role in helping shape who you are?
You know, I've had a lot of awesome opportunities to open for a number of wonderful national artists. And, you know, I think by having those experiences and getting to talk with, you know, most of them, that has really shaped me. I've gotten to hear their experiences and their encouragement. You know, that's been really wonderful for me. And, you know, Willie Porter was really a big one for me.
Well, what's the best piece of advice you've gotten from maybe a group you've opened for?
I would say the best advice is to, you know, I've been to Nashville a couple times. But I decided this on my own, and I've also been told this, that it's best to stay where you're at and, you know, try to build a following there first and grow from there.
What is it like to go from playing gigs in the Milwaukee area and in and around Brookfield to walking into Nashville, where I would hazard a guess that the country music scene is maybe a little different than Brookfield, Wisconsin?
Sure. I mean, in Nashville, it's, you know, everything is country, 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 country. And here, it's, you know, there's all different genres of music. And so that's really nice being in Milwaukee. You get to hear all different genres. And in Nashville, it's just there's so many people there all trying to achieve the same goal.
Do you feel like you can be a bigger fish in a smaller pond if you stick around here?
That's what I'm hoping for. You know, I'm trying really hard to build a following here because I think it's very important to have the support of, you know, your hometown. And, you know, I've noticed, too, that people from Wisconsin are extremely supportive. I love it here, so I'd prefer to stay here for now.
You've had some big fish moments. You've been recognized by the Whammies, among
yes.
others.
Yeah, I am very honored to have been named Wisconsin's 2012 and 2013 Whammy Rising Star. And also for the 2013 awards, I was nominated for Female Vocalist of the Year, which was a big honor for me.
Do you think it adds a little bit of pressure when you're named a rising star? Do you have to is it tough to live up to? You have to, in your mind, think, well, if I'm a rising star, I need to be a star down the road.
No, I don't feel any pressure about that. You know, obviously, I love music, and I'd love to make it my career. And, you know, if I become a big national star, that would be fantastic and amazing, and I'm sure I would love it. But if I just, you know, stay in Milwaukee and play like I am now, you know, I'd still have a wonderful time doing it. So it's wonderful to have that title and be recognized for my hard work, but I don't feel any pressure.
It must be something at the same time to be 19 and have two CDs under your belt.
Three CDs, actually. Oh, it's okay. You know, I realized when I was 14 that this is something that I really wanted to pursue, and I wrote enough songs to record that first CD, and I got some wonderful feedback, and a song that I wrote called Don't Slow Down that's on that first CD. I made a music video for it, and the music video made the top 16 in Country Music Television's Music City Madness contest. And so that gave me, you know, a lot of encouragement to continue, and that I was, you know, kind of going on the right path. So then I kept writing songs and recorded my second CD when I was 16, Run Away With Me, and just finished my brand new CD, Only the Beginning, in June. So I'm very proud of what I've been able to accomplish so far.
I think you said you're just about to film the next music video, right?
Yes. Actually, I filmed the music video for I'll Pray For You a couple months ago. And so it's in editing right now, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out. It's the same director that did the music video for Dimples Filled With Lies, which is off of my second CD. And that music video is being featured nationally on Zeus Country. So hopefully I'll Pray For You will end up in the same place.
I always wonder, when you're a musician and you're filming a music video, you have to play the song over and over and
yes.
over, and maybe just even snippets of the song over and over and over again. Does it ever feel like, I don't know, an out-of-body experience to be playing your music in a way where you're not really playing it the way you wrote it? You're playing it because they need multiple angles on you.
You know, it's just kind of fun. It really is. It's a different experience, something that not a lot of people get to do. I've had a lot of fun with the music videos that I've done. It's weird, you know, singing along to yourself, but it's just so much fun.
What have the most rewarding concerts been for you, either places or how do you know when you've reached the audience the way you want?
Sure. I've done some charity work and for the Alzheimer's Association. I Heart Nashville. It was a flood relief concert when there was the big floods in Nashville, and a number of different organizations. And, you know, that's always just very rewarding and it makes you feel good that you're doing what little you can and help make a difference. And I guess I know that I've touched someone with a song when they come and tell me. You know, they say, oh, I really love that song. I connected to it. And that means a lot to me.
Well, Nora Collins, thank you so much for spending some time with us. And when you are world famous, I hope you'll come back and see us again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And what else can you play for us to take us out?
Sure. This is another song that's off of the brand new CD. I wrote this with my friend Kevin Kirk. It's a song about broken promises. It's called Nothing to Do With Me.
Nora Collins' latest CD is called Only the Beginning. You can find a link to more about her from wuwm.com/lake effect. Her schedule includes a gig this evening at the Pabst Theater, where she'll share the stage with multiple Grammy winner Ronnie Millsap. Collins first talked to Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke in the fall. Well, Nashville is where our next band is based, but their sound is less Grand Ole Opry and more about the wide open spaces of the American West. The duo Escondido performs in Lake Effect Studio C when we return on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.
Silence. As I stand by the door, that one last kiss was a raw thing.
And All Music Lake Effect returns now. I'm Bonnie Knorr. Thanks for joining us. Before the break, we listened to Brookfield's Nora Collins, who's making a name for herself on the country circuit, even though she's miles away from country music's epicenter of Nashville. Our next band makes their home in Nashville, but they don't really fit the Grand Ole Opry stage. Escondido's sound brings to mind instead the open spaces of the American West. The duo features the harmonies of Tyler James and Jessica Maros, who were in Milwaukee earlier this spring to play at Mad Planet. While they were here, they inaugurated our newly revamped performance studio alongside Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke. They began by playing Cold October off their debut album, The Ghost of Escondido.
It's gonna be a cold October. 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 Walking, so much is made for locking, darling. It's a cold October. It's a cold October. It's a cold October.
Cold October, that's Escondido in WWM Studio C1. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And what a killer song.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, let's have you each introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are and what you're playing.
My name is Tyler, and I'm singing and playing electric guitar and tambourine in my foot.
I'm Jessica, and I play acoustic guitar and sing.
And I'm Grant, and I play the bass.
Well, welcome to all three of you. What do you take as the inspiration for your sound? I mean, Cold October sounds like it could have been at home on a Fleetwood Mac album in 1979, but there are other tracks on your most recent CD that could easily be in a Western movie circa 1965, and then there are some that kind of defy easy categorization. What was it that drove the sound of this band?
All of those things. We like 70s and 60s AM radio stuff, and we love being inspired by all the great spaghetti western soundtracks for our music, and we listen to a lot of chill stuff and a lot of rock and roll, crazy psychedelic stuff. So,
I mean, I think it was, you know, when Tyler and I met, a lot of the songs, it started with the song, and then after the song, you know, Tyler just had all these really awesome ideas about creating this sort of spaghetti western sound around the song. So that's kind of where it ended up.
Well, and did I read that you actually met, when you and Tyler met, you were actually sitting there strumming a guitar, is that right?
Yeah, a friend of ours introduced each other, and I was actually there singing a song for her and her song.
I was recording a Christmas song for a friend of ours.
And and she was like, Jess, play him Rodeo Queen. And I played Rodeo Queen. And that night I walked away with this awesome kind of track. We tracked it that night. And I was like, wow.
This is horrible.
This is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Never working with that guy again.
Wow. This is worse than Chumbawamba.
That is the second time Chumbawamba has been referenced in our office in like the last week, which is
wow.
Two more times than it has been referenced in like 5 years.
It's coming back.
90s are back.
Well, and Rodeo Queen has this great kind of brass, almost mariachi sound to it.
I didn't bring the trumpet. We had in the car, but we didn't have any songs that were playing trumpet on today.
Well, yeah, and trumpet is kind of, it is totally, totally different than the sound we just heard.
Yeah, but I think there's one common theme through the whole thing, and it's, you know, we love reverb, and we love trumpets, and we love the desert.
You mentioned tracking Rodeo Queen, but the album itself, The Ghost of Escondido, you recorded in one day.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was cool. We spent a couple months after that first day meeting, probably a week later, we started meeting more regularly and spent about a couple months working on the songs and kind of doing all pre-production. And then the night before the studio, we had, I gathered like three of our musician friends. We rehearsed kind of the demos we had done. And then the next day, we didn't know what was going to happen. We knew that our drummer
like
that day.
10 hour.
We knew our drummer that day had another gig that night, like at 8 p.m. So we got in there at 10 and started at noon and did like three takes of every song. And then I kind of just pieced together all that stuff.
We tried to do it again and it didn't work. So it was definitely something special that happened that day. It was just, you know, I think I thought a lot about it, and the guys that Tyler brought together, we barely knew each other. And so it was sort of like this moment of not really knowing each other, but yet really respecting each other. And then we took risks and it was really fun.
Is there a certain spontaneity you think you were able to capture in doing it just in that one quick session?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of the point of it, too, is not only to save money, but we had spent so much time making a pretty highly stylized record. And I wanted to smooth off some of the too stylized things. If you do it in a day, you can't really, it ends up sounding like whatever these five people in a room sound like, no matter how much you've planned it to sound a certain way. So it turned out pretty good.
Well, the next track you're going to play is, I think, one of the songs that you recorded that day. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear next.
Yeah, it's called Bad Without You. And I wrote, the idea came from doing things that the person you love doesn't like. We've all been through there. We've all had
that experience. I've never done that.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Without you.
Bad Without You, Escondido in Studio C1. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We think of Nashville as this center for country music. What do you get from being in Nashville when you are not a country act?
You get a lot.
Great.
Just everyone likes making really good music there, writing, working on your craft and learning from each other. And so no matter what genre you're in, you just take a lot from it and you grow a ton. And if you want to get better, it's the best place to be because you're inspired by so many legends that are just hanging out there.
I think it's like a mecca of songwriting, too. You know, a lot of people visit Nashville to become, just like you said, a better musician and all. And it's a great place of meeting people and, you know, front porch guitar hangs.
Well, and I wonder if there's some expanding of musical horizons that goes on just by everybody having access to everybody else.
Oh, there's so much. I mean, I think there's a huge underground scene happening right now.
Underground scene. It's probably as big as the country music scene. I mean, all around the world, people know about Nashville now, and most of them aren't talking about Conway Twitty or Travis Tritt. Well, even though that's pretty good country music, I like that stuff.
Well, and Tyler, you have done a lot of solo work. You've played with a variety of other bands. Where do you see Escondido in comparison to everything else you have done?
So far, it's been a lot more fun just like hanging out with us three.
You sure about that?
It's hard work. Being a solo artist is also hard, but you get to make all the decisions yourself. But it's really nice to have a partner in crime. And I think after I played with this band, Edward Sharp, for a while, I got to feel what it was like to be in a bigger community of people on stage. And it was so much more relaxing and fun. And having other people that kind of get your back and depend on for stuff has been awesome. And not singing leads, pretty fun too.
Well, and Jessica, you have been around music for a long time, but if I understand right, before this record, you were around music more than you were playing music. You actually work as a fashion designer, is that right?
Yeah, actually, I came to Nashville to do music. I had like a small development deal, and I wrote a whole bunch of songs and made a couple albums. I just never liked them and never released anything. And so Escondido is the first thing I ever released. And then, yeah, I kind of quit music a little bit and started a fashion company and then, you know, made clothes and jewelry and all that fun stuff. But
if you were to draw the Venn diagram of music and design, is there an overlap between those two kinds of artistic output?
Yeah, definitely. You know, fashion's a form of expression, and so
it's all creative. So
you want to, when you wake up in the morning, it's how you feel. I don't think you should box yourself in with anything you do. I think if you do, then you're boring. There's a lot more business involved in fashion. I mean, there's a lot of business in music, but I think that just business overall in fashion, I felt like I was kind of losing myself as an artist. So music's just a lot better of an outlet for me.
So as we're having this conversation, you have done shows, what, 10 nights in a row?
Yeah. This is our
first day off tomorrow.
When you're playing that many dates in a row, is it energizing at all or just tiring?
It is energizing. Every night's so different, so you never know what to expect, and it kind of throws you off for a loop, especially when you're tired.
Yeah.
You're like, how am I going to respond to this one? You know,
you're constantly exhausted, but sometimes you show up and the show actually goes way better because of that, and it's just rock and roll. And other times you feel like you're gonna faint. And
has that happened yet?
Last night I took it. I was like my first beer of the day, and I had like a sip of beer, and I kind of stumbled. I was like almost like partly fainted, and people in the crowd probably thought I was like drunk or something. It's like, no, but I didn't have time to explain myself because we started the next song, so.
It's like a Spinal Tap moment.
Yeah, just going around.
Spontaneous combustion.
Our fourth drummer couldn't be here today.
Well, I'm grateful none of you have spontaneously combusted while you're in our studio today.
Yeah, me too.
Tyler, Jessica, and Grant, thank you so much to
thank
all
you.
Three of you, and best of luck.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And tell us what you're going to play us out with.
This is a song we've been playing just on this tour the first time by the Everly Brothers called When Will I Be Loved?
Escondido is Tyler James and Jessica Maros. They're based in Nashville and are currently touring the U.S. and Canada. Their debut album, The Ghost of Escondido, came out last year, and they're working on their follow-up. They spoke with Mitch Tyke, and we're hearing their rendition of the Everly Brothers classic, When Will I Be Loved? And with that, we close another week's worth of Lake Effects. Our show is produced by Mitch Tyke, Dan Harmon, and Stephanie Lecce. We get a lot of production assistance from Eleanor Peterson, web support from Michelle Maternowski, and studio engineering from John Strelecki. I'm Bonnie North. I hope you have a great weekend, and thanks so much for tuning in today. We're back Monday morning at 10, and of course, you can join us Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend as well. It's all on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock. She always breaks my heart in two.